And welcome to Adulting with Ebony, the podcast where each week I explore what it means to be a kick-ass and kind adult in our modern world. Expect strong language and viewpoints, as no topic is out of bounds here. My guests and I will navigate the complete spectrum from wildness to responsibility with compassion and curiosity rather than expectation. I'm Ebony Allard and I'm a misfit turned maven, an author, a coach and your host for Adulting with Ebony. Come on then, let's do this. Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of Adulting with Ebony. Today I'm joined by Jess Critchlow, who is the top dog at Light Up Work, where she helps online entrepreneurs transform into super confident and competent bosses so that they can finally build their dream team and grow their biz. And when she's not with her fellow bosses talking all things peoples and teams, you can find her chasing after her crazy kiddo Ray or sampling the latest craft beer with her husband Ollie at their home in Windsor, Canada. Hey, welcome. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks, Ebony. It's very exciting. I love your podcast, so it's so good to be here.
It's so nice. So Jess got in touch and was like, I really want to be on your podcast and I really love it. Just FYI, if you do that, I'm blatantly going to go, yeah, really? But only if you've got something really, really awesome and cool to talk about. And what I loved as I kind of got to know who you are and discover what you do, I was like, oh, I really do want to talk about all these themes. These are fantastic themes for us to talk about and that are really going to benefit the Adulting with Ebony community. And so I'm going to start by asking what adulting means to you.
Okay. As a fan of your podcast, because you know I'm a fan, I have thought about this many times as I've been driving my napping kid around. And you know, I'm going to say something that is not one I've thought of before. I was thinking about this morning, and for me, it's doing things you don't want to do. Now, but here's what I want to caveat this with. What I mean by that is doing things that are really uncomfortable, but in service of your work, your values, what's important to you. And I think people agree with me that adulting is doing things you don't want to do, but screw up the equation. So instead of like, I have to have this uncomfortable conversation with my in-laws about childcare or whatever, it's, well, I don't want to work at a full-time job, but that's what adults do. So I guess I'll go do that. And that's what I mean when I say the things you don't want to do. It's the uncomfortable things in service of what you truly want, not, well, I'm a woman in this society, so I guess I have to, you know, wear skirts and not know about money and stuff. Like, it's just, So that's, to me, that's what popped up today was the uncomfortable stuff.
I love that. And, you know, you have heard me talk about it before, but I love that as an equation because I really like the way that that's a two-part equation, that you can't have one without the other. And there's that part of taking responsibility. We have to assume responsibility for ourselves and our reality and understand that we're doing something that is uncomfortable and that we don't want to do in service of or so that we can live the kind of life that we want to be, so that we can feel empowered. You know, there's... Mm-hmm. And particularly that one, right? So the one around uncomfortable conversations. Most of the time, we don't want to have that uncomfortable conversation because there's a level of conflict that might arise or rejection that might happen or someone might think you're stupid or silly, or we've all got a list of reasons why we don't want to have those uncomfortable conversations. But it is my experience as a practice partaker in uncomfortable conversations that on the other side is a much deeper sense of connection and a level of intimacy that you wouldn't achieve without going through that.
Absolutely. And intimacy is an interesting word you use because so as you know, as you said in my intro, I work with bosses and managers, leaders, whatever label you like. I like boss because I want to reclaim that word. And intimacy is actually incredibly important in that relationship between boss and employee. And people get weirded out and they kind of think it's just work. It's not, I just go in and I do my work and I leave, you know, or that can be a common thing. And intimacy is a huge key ingredient of that relationship working. And when I say working, meaning both parties are confident and comfortable. They can both say the things they need to say to do good work. Not hating your job. Like, come on, the stats out there of 70% of people, pretty much across cultures, not being engaged, not caring about what they do, breaks my heart. Like, it's just, and you know, what I see is that it's not usually company. It's not usually even tasks. It's not job responsibilities. It's that relationship.
So I love that when we had a kind of preamble and when you sent some information over, you put together this kind of secret sauce for bosses, yeah. right? I'd yeah. love to hear a bit more about that. So first of all, can you tell us what it is and what you mean by the secret sauce for bosses?
Okay. So here's my secret sauce. And everyone's going to think like, oh, well, it doesn't sound so secret. Then more people should do it. Anyways, secret sauce for being a really great boss. Bravery plus empathy plus practice. That's the piece that I like to make sure is in there too. Bravery plus empathy plus practice equals kick-ass, amazing, awesome, get shit done, loved by your team boss. So let me the three different ingredients. So empathy is exactly what you think. It's caring about that individual as a human, not as a job title, not as a what can they do for you, as a human. Being able to think from that person's perspective, understand where they're coming from, right? That's empathy. And that, like, that sounds pretty obvious. Everyone wants that boss that can do that. What we also need, though, is bravery. And bravery is giving the feedback that's really, really uncomfortable and means that person might not be happy with you. It can mean letting someone go. You know, I think we often, you know, vilify firing someone, and I understand why we do. But if that person is unable to do what you need them to do, and you constantly are giving them negative feedback, telling them why it's not good enough, like, that's soul destroying stuff. So sometimes the brave thing is, this isn't the right fit for either of us. And I care too much about you to let you keep being shitty at your job.
And, you know, and that's an awesome equation for relationship, right? Let alone a work right? And you know, you've used different words there, but it's in essence kind of very, very similar to what I mean when I talk about being kick-ass and kind, right? So being kick-ass is being
exactly,
and being kind is coming from a place of more to all, harm to none, right?
Yeah. And what I see with bosses, and you probably see this as well from in relationships, I imagine, because it is all just relationships, isn't it? I see people doing one or the other. So the brave boss who thinks I have to be hard ass, and they don't have the empathy in there. And that's, come on, no one wants to work for that person. It's not going to go well. And the other side as well is hard. If you only have empathy and don't say the hard things, do the hard things, you're also not gonna have intimacy, and you're not gonna have someone who does good work, because A, you're probably not telling them what good work is, and it's not gonna work. And that's
go ahead.
I was gonna say, and the third piece of that sauce is practice. It's knowing you're gonna screw it up. It's knowing you don't get to just go and do a $20,000 degree and then you've got this. That's not how this works. It's every day, the little things, the little habits. That's the equation. It's not a degree. It's not, oh, well, I hired a consultant, so now I'm a good boss. That's not how it works. It's the practice every day, every week, every month.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And doing so, from a place so you know, I talk about that in terms of participation over perfection, right? Like, knowing that you're going to show up and you're going to get it right, and that the rules are going to change, and there isn't just one way, and that as your team, you know, also in any business or in any situation, really, what got you here won't get you there. So the goalposts are moving constantly anyway.
Absolutely.
So you can't possibly have it all figured out before you even begin.
You know, and I have this theory, and I want to know if this is what you see as well.
Okay.
I have this theory that what I see a lot in bosses, and I don't think it's just bosses, is we confuse empathy and kindness with being nice. And I actually don't think they're the same thing at all. Being nice, from what I've seen, and certainly what I've experienced, is like, I want them to have a certain opinion of me. It's like an ego. I want them to think I'm this wonderful person, so I'm going to do things that I think will build that perception. And being kind is not about you at all. Like, it's totally in service of that other person. And it's also sometimes uncomfortable. Like sometimes the kind thing is not the nice thing. And I'm just curious if you see, if that's just bosses that I see it, or if you see that as well.
I think it's absolutely universal. And, you know, a lot of the times when I'm working particularly with, so the majority of the people that I work with are women or people identify as a woman, and therefore have grown up in an environment which has not encouraged them to fully embrace their more feminine qualities. So what I call the yin, or the kind of the healer, or the, you know, that nurturing kind energy. And that's not to say that the opposite or the other end of that spectrum is masculine, is unkind. It's not, it's challenging, right? Mm-hmm. And again, for me, these really aren't gendered. They are energetic. When I look at kind of warrior and healer, or sun and moon, or like yin and yang, these different energies within us, what works best is balancing those energies, knowing when to use one and knowing when to use the other. And that, I think, is especially true when you're managing a person, when whether that is an employee or whether it's a child, you still got to manage them, right? Element to needing to care, particularly when you've got an agenda, and it's very, very different. You know, I've got a friend at the moment who is working with her child to have him learn how to do his own shoelaces, and there are a number of strategies that you can employ. Now, if you're in a hurry and you have an agenda, you're going to employ a very different strategy to getting him to do his shoes than if you've got all the time in the world and you let it be child-led and, you know, all of that.
Yeah.
One of those is a much more kick-ass warrior energy around how these shoes are going to get done. And like, come on, you can do it. Go again. Let's do it. You know, very masculine and kind of our internal dad energy coming in and buoying us up to go again. And the other is, you know what, is really nurturing, is much more gentle. It's like, we've got all the time in the world. You can go again. You did excellent. You did it and it didn't work out how you thought it was. That's try one. Let's try again. Like these different energies within us. What really works is understanding how to use one and use the other, and then recognizing that there's a shadow side to both of those, right? So the shadow side of healer, or the shadow side of nurturing, is being a pushover and not having any boundaries. And doing things like you said, being kind because of the response it will get, and actually being manipulative in using of that energy. Whereas the kind of shadow side of the more warrior energy is command, right? Like, you have no choice in this. You must do what I say.
Yeah.
And I think it's really interesting because you've seen all of those bosses as well, right?
Yeah. And I love that you talk about energy versus gender, because I've actually worked with much more men in my career than women. And it's absolutely energetic. I've worked with men who you'd never from a stereotype perspective call them feminine at all, but their energy as a manager was very feminine. I don't know if that's the label, but certainly it's that yin, it's that being, receiving, healing, to the point where sometimes they actually need to bring in the masculine side of that, and vice versa. So it's actually, yes, appreciate that, you know, in general, maybe men are more confident and comfortable with one energy over the other, but I've seen the broad spectrum, and the bosses that I think are the most impactful, they not only have a balance of both, but they're conscious about both, not manipulative.
Yeah.
Not like, oh, I know what to do to get them to do what I need, you know, not like that, but they're very conscious of what is the right approach right now, you know, and sometimes it is coming in and saying, guys, this is what we need to do. I'm happy to discuss it tomorrow. We've got this huge client fire going on. And sometimes it's the feminine and they choose it very much based on the person in front of them, the situation. And it's always so impactful.
Yeah.
So impactful.
I love that the layer of consciousness around it. You know, for me, that, again, that's adulting versus, you know, adolescing.
If that's the
thing, right? It's like choosing to consciously go create space between you and the situation so that you're not reacting to the situation. And then making conscious choices about what you're bringing. And I think the point about it not being gendered is now more than ever so important for us. You know, I use these words as a way in, and we have all of us grown up in a patriarchal society that values some of the more masculine traits and virtues over the more feminine virtues. But again, they're not gendered, and I don't have better language right now that is accessible for everybody.
Yep.
And that's so I'm working with what I got.
And you know, it's interesting you say that. Like, I'll speak for myself. I sometimes forget that men have been just as hurt by patriarchy as I have, as women have. You know, the amount of male leaders I work with who are so, you would never guess it from the outside, but they are so lacking in confidence in that being side of leadership, in the intimacy, in the, well, I, you know, they'll come to me and say, my team member seems really down. I'm really worried about them. Can you go and talk to them? And I'm like, nope. you know, but there's like the response, if there was more confidence and more sort of nurturing in that side of them in our culture, would be they just go and say, hey, are you, let's have a talk, let's grab a coffee, I'm just thinking about you. But that's so outside of the realm of confidence, of just the normal, and I'm doing air quotes for those who can't see me, way of being. And it's heartbreaking, because again, those impactful managers, and this is again beyond, you know, bosses, but they are able to do that. They're confident in that sphere, for sure.
And there's something really important that you just mentioned there, and that is confidence. Yeah, they're not confident in it, but they're not confident in it because they don't have a competency in it, and they don't have a competency in it because they haven't practiced it, which brings us back to the equation all over.
Back to my secret sauce. And it's what you said. It's like, it's, what was your thing? It's something over perfection. It's like, it's that thing of, you become so, participation over perfection. You become so confident in your, whatever your way of managing or leading, that you don't, you shy away from the things that you know you'll mess up because it's new. You 100, I can tell any boss or really any person listening right now, you, when you try something new with your team, you are going to screw it up. You will. That's part of the deal. And that's how you learn. And that's how you get feedback from your team, and you find out what works and what doesn't, and you go back up to the plate again. That's the deal. There's no escaping that.
I get that, right? And it's one of the things that I really want to change in the world, but it's unfortunate that the way that we have defined leader means completely infallible, knows everything, is on a pedestal, like this kind of guru worshipping, looking up to, giving our power away, and then and then as the leader being like, oh yes, I have all the power, I must do, you know, it's like, it's so fucked up, but we need to change this dynamic. Mm-hmm. And I really hope by encouraging our leaders to play and explore and be curious and fail forward in, you know, into each other is I hope that it will shift that dynamic.
Yeah. And you know, it's you gave parenting as an example, and as someone who's just had a child, I can say that parenting is probably the hardest form of leadership that there is. Any form of leadership, you know, you can't teach what you can't do. We can argue that, and I won't, but truly the shifts you want to see in your child, your team, whatever, you have to be able to model it. Like, you can't teach your little girl to have body confidence if you constantly look in the mirror and say, I'm disgusting. You can't teach your team to care about clients when you come back and talk about how all your clients are idiots. That's just not how it works. I wish it could, but it's not how it works. You got to try. You got to show them. And that's not leading from the front. That's not being infallible. I'm the boss. Look at me. That's that old school, you know, power over that we see dying out. I think we do. I hope we do. And I think we do. This is leading from within. This is, I'm a member of the gang. Yes, I have certain responsibilities you don't, but we're in this together. It's a very different form of leadership that is more impactful. We've seen that, but scarier as well.
Oh, it's really scary. You know, there are days where I think, why am I doing this? Why did I choose this? I don't like it. Yeah. I really, you know, and I have to be honest about that as well, because that's part of it. Like, I am, I'm a Leo, I am, I don't know why I'm bringing this in at this particular point, but I am. I'm a very cuspy Leo, so I'm right on the cusp of Cancer and Leo, and which I often jokingly say that on a good day means I'm empathic and generous, and on a bad day means that I'm overly sensitive and arrogant. but it also, it comes with leadership, right? Like, there's something in being a Leo, and you know, maybe it's the other six planets. I have some Sagittarius, and I have no idea why we've gone down this route, but quite a lot of Leos, it is innate, right? It isn't necessarily a choice. It's just how we were born. It's what we were asked to do. It's how, depending on how kind of woo you are, it's a divine mission of some sort. This is what we showed up to, and we agreed that we wanted to do in this lifetime. And that doesn't always mean that it's great. And leadership comes with rewards. There are wonderful, there's that kind of significant and recognition and money and power and all of those things. And again, then there's the shadow side, because the law of polarity states that we have both, right? Equal and opposite forces, and both exist in any one given moment. So there's also that, like, why me? Too much responsibility. Everyone's, you know, like, I never get a day off. Like, all of those things that come with it. And I think developing empathy across the board will go a really long way in helping us navigate the societal shift that we're seeing.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, if there's anyone, if any of your audience is listening and thinking, that all sounds great, but, like, how?
Yeah.
Like, okay, I want to get better at empathy. Now what? You know what? There's a lot of different things that we can do. And I still practice it. I cannot sit here and say, like, 100% empathetic, done. There's a lot of different little things you can do. And that's what I want to, if anyone, you know, in your audience is curious, focus on the little things. Like, don't worry about shifting this huge, like, becoming, making it this huge over-engineered thing, which is what I see people do. Focus on the little things. So a really easy one is, you know, especially for those who commute on public transit, try to guess emotions. Just it. Like, genuinely just look at a stranger and go, what is their face telling me? And it's awkward for people because it actually does involve some intuition, some gut feel, which we're not always confident and comfortable with. That's why we practice. But yeah, guess an emotion. And another one is, especially with someone you trust, and hopefully that's a team member, but it could be, you know, sort of another boss that you work with or whoever. Guess and ask. Say, can I arrange it ahead of time, design it ahead of time. Say, like, I'm working on my skill at sort of understanding where people are coming from. Do you mind if I just throw these past you and sort of data check it with you? And then say, I think you're feeling really frustrated right now, but I'm not, like, am I right? Am I wrong? How close am I to the mark? It really is just, like, actually start having a go. seeing if you're right, seeing if you can course correct a little bit, and just start practicing and name it.
I love that. That's a really, a lovely, tangible, real life thing that you can do. And I guess from my perspective, if you're not comfortable doing it in your work environment, you know, like, that's what friends are for as well.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Like, I gotta be honest, and this is not gonna be good for my, like, professional reputation if anyone's listening, curious about working with me, but I gotta say it anyways. I genuinely think some of the bosses who work with me, it's truly because they're lonely. They're like, I want to run something by someone. You seem to know what you're doing. Can we work together? Like, I think beyond my sort of expertise, which is there, but I think a big part of it is I want a sounding board that I can trust, that I can run these things by, that I don't have to fail quite as harshly in front of my team. I can fail in front of you first and then fail a little bit less in front of them. Find that. And it can be a friend, you know, it doesn't have to be you don't have to hire someone. It can be whatever works for you.
And I think there's something really in that, you know, like, regardless of what I'm really hearing from what you're saying, whether it's a work situation, whether it's a home situation, if you're looking to learn and grow, to grow professionally, to grow personally, this personal growth thing is really important. And often, when we're first starting out, it can feel like a lot of pressure to do it around those people that we know or that we really don't want to fail in, again, inverted commas, in front of, right? So hiring a coach, hiring, you know, like a counselor or a consultant, or, you know, there's a whole layer of our profession that come in and almost act as a buffer for you to practice, you know, identifying emotions, identifying challenges, having those uncomfortable. A lot of the work that I do is actually in some kind of a way role-playing those challenging conversations so that you don't go and have the very first uncomfortable conversation that you've been willing to have with your mum about something hugely emotive that you then then goes horribly wrong because you've let the emotion take over, because you've never practiced it before, because it's the first time you're having that kind of conversation. So having those trial runs with someone who is outside of the situation so that you can almost run through the emotion about not getting it right or about whatever it is that comes through and make that easier for you.
Well, and what I love about what you do is I think it helps people clear their stories. Like there's nothing wrong with strong emotions. Like, of course there's not, you know, given the work we do, we wouldn't be like, emotions are bad. What can trip you up though is the stories you have about those emotions, the stories you have about those dynamics, and you get so like in your head that you're not actually present for that conversation anyways. And so working with you ahead of time, you can clear some of that out of the way so you can actually have the conversation you want to have and not with the like imaginary person in your head, which, let's be honest, it's what we do.
We all do it. You know, you're right. And because we're wired for survival, we've got a negativity bias that's always going to show us the worst case scenario, right? Like, we're going to play out like how it's all going to go horribly wrong, so that our ego and our limbic brain and the part of us that comes in to protect us is going to go, see, I wanted to keep you the same because the same is safe, right? And so, you know, there's a lot more to this work than it being just a conversation. There's kind of and I think a lot of people don't necessarily see that, you know, in your work as well. Like the actual work looks like a conversation quite often, and yet there's so much more going on beneath the surface.
And I'll say one more thing, and then I know I'm kind of rabbiting on about this. The other thing I'll just point people towards to start noticing, this is what I use with bosses, but I think it probably applies across different areas, is start to notice when you say something like, oh, why is he doing that? Actually ask that question. You're asking it because you're annoyed with that person, but actually ask it. Like, actually dig in and go, okay, I'm going to take a deep breath. Okay, what could that person's motivation be? Like, why have they missed giving me that report? Why have they handed that report in late every week for 3 months?
I'm going to put a caveat on that. There's something, so when you go to coaching school or when you learn to ask questions, same. There's something.
I did CTI. They hate the why question.
because of what happens in our bodies, right? So what happens in our bodies and our brains, as soon as someone goes why, we go, wasn't my fault. Like, you get really defensive when we
ask. Let me clarify. Don't ask the person why. Ask yourself.
Okay.
Right? It's like what is going on? What, you know, I've asked that person to hand in the report. They've handed in late for 3 months. What could possibly be going on? Because you start to clear out your stories. You get super clear on like what am I making up about this person? I guarantee you what
actually going on.
No, don't say no. Clear yourself first. Work with Ebony or me first. Don't have that conversation. Because what you're doing is you're making up. They're lazy. They don't care. And it's actually what you'll find is it's actually your stuff, right? Sure, handing in the report late probably isn't good for your work, and you need to have a conversation about that. But what you're making up and why you're getting so frustrated and angry is they don't respect me. They don't care about it's your stories that you're mad about. It's not actually that person. So clear those out. Work with me, Ebony. And then you can go and have an actual, let's problem solve this, because we can't hand these in late. So let's actually clear the roadblocks out of the way. Let's figure this out. Not from an emotive, you disrespect, like whatever the story is, right?
Yeah, I love that. That's so, so true. And it's a wonderful thing. Wonderful thing that people can do. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, no problem.
We just talked the whole way through our time, and I love that we did. I love loved having you talk about this stuff with me, and I could talk to you for hours and hours. So I'm, you know, we'll figure something out another time.
Yeah.
For those interested in finding out more about you, where is the best place for them to go look?
I'm so old school. The best place to go is just my website. Like, I'd love to tell you I have some big social media thing. I'm not. I'm like an 80-year-old stuck in a 30-something-year-old's body. So check out my website, www.lightupwork.com. I am floating around Facebook a little bit. I'm on Instagram a little bit. But go to the website, drop me an email, jess@lightupwork.com. Send me a snail mail because I'm an old lady. That's probably even better. But yeah, that's the best place to find me.
I love that. And we'll put all the links on the show notes so everyone can click through nice and easily. Let's end with a little confession of sorts. Do you have an I'm an adult but for me?
Oh my God, I have too many and I don't want to admit any of them. I'm an adult, but I especially after our entire conversation, this is a bit rich, but I have like so much baggage about in-laws. And I'm really hoping my in-laws aren't listening to this. I don't think they will. But it's like, you know what I mean? I'm really mature and like in all these ways. And it comes to my in-laws and I'm like, they just like, oh. Like I even turn, like I do the teenager noise. I'm like, oh, they just, oh, my father-in-law just doesn't get it. Just doesn't get me. But I'm working on it.
I love your honesty. And I, you know, mine is very similar today. So, you know, I am an adult, but there are many, many days where I really wish I wasn't.
Can I? I'm going to say that one too. I'll ditto that one.
Yeah. Yeah. Jess, thank you so much for coming and chatting with me. It's been a lot of fun.
This is so much fun, Ebony. Thanks so much for having me. It's been such an honor.
This has been Adulting with Ebony. I have been Ebony. You have been great. Thank you so much for all of your support. Please keep listening, liking, rating, sharing so that more people can come and enjoy and engage with us. Really, thank you. I'll see you next time.